In this episode, Zoe has a fantastic chat to Dr. Flora Salim, Associate Professor at the School of Computer Science and Information Technology, RMIT University. She obtained her PhD in Computer Science from Monash University. Her research areas are mobile and persuasive computing, urban computing, activity and behavior recognition, and applied data mining and machine learning for ambient intelligence. In this episode, Flora shares with us how she sees Australia embracing smart community concepts, as well as some of the projects she's working on right now, including a foot traffic prediction app in Melbourne and a tool to help residents and tourists plan their barbecues in public parks. Zoe and Flora discuss change management and better integrating across disciplines, governments, and industries. They finish their conversation discussing the emerging trends of the good things happening because of AI, the need for choice and control when it comes to our data, and the concept of algorithmic governance. As always, we hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as we enjoyed making it.
Welcome to the smart community, smart regions, smart towns, and smart cities. It's where we live, work, and play with smart communities. The future starts today. Big data, smart mobility, emerging trends galore. The Smart Community Podcast is what you're looking for.
Hello, Flora. How are you today?
I'm very good, thank you.
That's good to hear. Let's just jump straight in. And can you tell us about your background and what you're passionate about?
I'm a computer science academic, and I did my PhD in Monash University, and now I'm an associate professor in RMIT University, computer science and IT discipline. And my research area is in mobile and pervasive ubiquitous computing, applying data mining, machine learning to sensor data that we retrieve from many sources, such as Internet of Things and sensors and wireless networks. They are now available from everywhere you can think of, from cars, from smartphones, from buildings, shopping malls, or road network. And my passion is really about understanding the patterns of human behaviors and activities and movements in order to understand how we can improve the efficiency of operations as well as the quality of life.
Excellent. What sparked your interest in this smart city space?
I think smart cities has a lot of challenges. The thing is, you don't stop by just putting sensors and connectivity and making things connected across the smart cities and you call them smart. There's a lot more to what makes a city smart or what makes community smart. And that's the part that's still missing. And the main reason for that is because there's a lot of complexity in a city, in an urban environment. There are a lot of uncertainty in terms of also the dynamics of behaviors in the cities. For example, if you compare it with smart farms, this is so different because in the rural area, there might not be too much variations. And whereas in cities, you know, all things can happen. So because I'm always interested in solving challenging problems using data-driven techniques, smart cities itself always has different types of data sets and problems that we can actually fuse together in order to start solving basically and improving the quality of life.
Mm-hmm. Really leads on to the next question. And I'm going to pick up on your term, your use of community, because that's what we really want to be talking about. So what is a smart community to you?
Smart community will be, people who are actually well-equipped with what's around them. So there's a heightened awareness of things around them and they have information at their disposal, at their fingertips. And they can make decisions collaboratively together using information that's actually provided to them. And they basically can also make a decision in an informed manner.
Mm. And why do you think that this concept, the smart community concept, is so important?
Well, the smart community concept is important because I think there's a lot of changes these days. Our life has changed due to disruption of Internet of Things and AI. And just look at the smartphones in front of you, or maybe you're using it right now. That's actually an example of evidence of how our life has been disrupted, right? So we are all now connected on the phone, and this phone itself is no longer just a communication tool, but it's basically a device that connects you to the whole world. right? And being connected through social media and a phone and all that doesn't always mean that you are, you know, you're becoming aware of your surroundings or your community. And you may not also be physically connected. So it's very important for a smart community to have a level of engagement to the environment, to things around them, and also to one another. And I think that is what we call more a cyber-physical social behaviors that we want to understand from all this movement in the city. At the same time, how can we inform groups or communities or even individuals to be aware more of the community?
Mm. How do you think Australia is embracing the smart community concept?
I'm not sure if people even know about what is smart community, to be honest. People might know about smart cities, but I'm not sure about smart community. I think the main difference here is really with the smart community, you have the humans in the loop, right? When you think about smart cities, you're thinking about, you know, just you've got maybe the cars will become autonomous. There will be, as you walk out the door and you don't want to drive, maybe there'll be a autonomous bus picking you up right in front of your door, delivering you to the station. And as you reach your office, they'll be aware that you're actually coming. So you prepare a warm coffee for you ready at your desk. And this whole thing, you know, that's the basically smart cities. It's all to do with efficiency and all that, right? But where is the human? Where are the human or users? Where are the citizens in it? So I think the smart community is where you have that level of awareness as well, that what is happening and also where are the people around me? How do I engage? How do I improve a sense of belonging? How do I improve the sense of community? And how do I improve my relationship and my work productivity even, and even improving collaboration in the ways we work together by utilizing and riding on all this efficiency that's going to happen around us. And I think that is, I'm not sure if it's already here and now in Australian cities.
Mm. I really love that you've talked about the smart city and the smart community, because that's what I've been kind of talking about on the podcast. And that's why I shifted my language to the community, because as soon as we just now shifted from city to community, we brought in that human aspect. So thanks so much for touching on that. It's really kind of captured what I was trying to achieve when I shifted my language to the community, because I think you're exactly right. When people hear smart city, even though it's not necessarily the case, like it's smart city is supposed to incorporate the humans and you know, the community and the society, etc. But when you use that term smart community, your brain automatically switches to, oh, okay, well, that must include the people. Oh, how are we engaging with the people? That kind of thing. So thanks so much for sharing that. And I'm really keen to hear about some of the work that you're doing in the space that you're working in.
Right. Okay. Just want to give you an example of a project that we just got recently funded on. And maybe I should take another step back before I talk about this project. So we work a lot with city planners. So in an example is in a work that we did 2 years ago for City of Melbourne. So they have pedestrian sensors. So Melbourne CBD has multiple pedestrian sensors, I think up to 50 now, that are placed around the city in order to capture the number of pedestrian traffic, basically the volume of pedestrian traffic at different locations around the city. So the sensors can tell you in real time how many people passing a certain point where the sensors are located. But they still can't make decisions about it. So this type of decision, basically, how many people will be here tomorrow by 12 o'clock, for example. The thing is, if they know ahead of time, using this prediction or forecasted number, they could then plan better. Like, do they need to ask for more train services, or do they need to actually, if there's going to be a real big event, do they need extra ambulance, first aid service, or anything you name it, right? So they need to know how to plan ahead. And we actually we developed a system just like your weather app, like in the morning and when you, before you go to work, before you leave the house, you check the weather app because you want to know what you're going to wear and it should be well suited for the day, right? And this is like, this is a traffic prediction app, a foot traffic prediction app for the City of Melbourne planners. So they could see that on hourly by hourly basis, how many people will visit different places in the city up to the next 2 weeks. So we have these reproducing reports to them every day so they can then plan for the next 2 weeks. So that's basically what we do, for example. but it does remove the citizens from, because it's only for the planners. So a lot of our work really are for the operators, for the planners, for the building managers. So we don't involve the users, but only recently we started working with the users as well. So one recent project we had with Mornington Shire, Mornington Peninsula, so if you to this area in Melbourne, that's basically a region where a lot of tourists go, especially during summer. It has a really nice beach, foreshore areas where people go for barbecues or even playground along the foreshores. And there are some nice shopping strips as well. So in this area, it gets really, really crowded during summer. So even for the residents, for them to actually go and find a car park just to buy, just to do their, for their normal grocery shopping, for example, they can't find a car park. Or maybe they plan for a birthday party in a park with a barbecue, but they just can't find one. So, and there's no data available. There's no information. No census have been installed at all. So we just got a Smarter City Suburbs grant. Work with the Mornington Shire, where we are now installing a census to monitor parking areas, on-street parking as well, pedestrian foot traffic, as well as monitoring the amenities, including the bins and the toilets and the barbecue pits and the drainage, and a lot of things that we're monitoring. But we don't stop there. We don't actually just stop there and let people see the data in life and make decisions. But what we aim to do is we want to develop a tool for both residents and tourists to plan their trips. So giving you an example, somebody from Melbourne who wants to spend a day in Mornington, they might want to plan to tour the whole region, including the wine region there, and spending some time on the beach. They might not know how to actually plan their day best, but using our data, we can then predict, for example, I think based on the past history, the barbecue here will be a little quieter than the other one here. So, we will suggest an itinerary for the tourists for the whole day. And because of these different requests, we can start balancing these itinerary suggestions as well. That's basically what we plan to do.
Excellent. That sounds really interesting. And I think the application is just for tourists now, for example, but the application further down the track could be quite huge.
Yeah, I agree. And this is where I'm saying where you put the data in the hands of people. So, and not only that, the analytics in the hands of people, and they can make decision based on our suggestions.
Yeah, yeah. Any other projects you'd like to share with us?
Well, another project there are two other projects that I can mention. One project that we've done, and it was covered recently in the news as well, is where we use social media data to improve the accuracy of predicting crime. So, we know that in some states in the U.S., the police department have been using some algorithms developed by the U.S. academics, especially UCSD, on predictive policing, but this is only based on historical crime data. So these models are really good in predicting just burglary. So what we do is we believe that in urban environment, because of the dynamics of urban environment, it will be interesting perhaps to observe the movement and also the behaviors of movement in cities and whether they have any correlation with different types of crime. And we did that, and especially we use all kind of data, including weather data, public transportation schedules, places of interest data. And then we found that check-ins data has the highest correlation to a lot of different types of crime. So using social media check-ins, we can actually boost the prediction accuracy for predicting where and when next theft will happen, assault, even alcohol-related or drug-related crimes. And using this, then, if this actually can be used by the police, they can actually improve the safety of the community and they can plan their dispatch ahead of time, especially in securing busy areas of the city. So that's basically what we've done. We've tested this data actually on Brisbane crime data as well as New York. So that's why our work was covered by Brisbane Times. And we also have done, we have completed a project with Arup. It's a 3 years research project where it's about smart airport. So have you experienced waiting for taxis in airport once you arrive after a long haul flight? And I know that no one likes that, right? Because you're tired after the long haul flight, you just want to go home. So our work here is basically trying to improve the experience of ground transport, right? So when somebody just arrive at the airport, they want to reach a certain destination. And can we actually give them a suggestion which transport to take, whether it's a bus or sky bus, like for example in Melbourne, or if there's a train, metro, or whether it's taxi, right? And we also predict the quality of service of all these different services that's running, so including the queue time, right? And it's, interestingly, in for example, in the three airports of New York that we implemented this for, again, this is still in the research domain. It hasn't been deployed, but we're using real-world data of taxis, flight delays, and custom processing time, and all kind of data to predict how long does a person need to wait in a queue, how long is a taxi queue, based on all kind of different factors. And therefore, using that, if let's say you just arrived in the airport and you normally take the taxi, but we can predict, for example, by this time when you arrive, we know there will be a certain type of length in the queue of the custom, but also, you know, taxis. So maybe by the time you arrive, by the time you leave the airport, exit the gate of the airport, the queue will be that long, right? Maybe you should take an Uber rather than a taxi, or we can make these kind of suggestions.
Okay, excellent. Well, let's move on to the next question. And I imagine, like in a lot of these projects, even in just the research phase, then the next phase is, you know, to get different disciplines, governments, industry involved. How do you think we can do that integration piece better across the different disciplines, government, and industries?
A lot of times when we want to move this into the real world deployment, it is then to do with the trial, right? So first is there needs to be funding to support the trials, and there needs to be also policy that support the trial, right? So what we expect could be, you know, there need to be a closer involvement of the parties that are willing to trial this. Just giving an example, the work on the crime prediction. We know if it's actually really working and deployed, it might improve, you know, it might actually reduce crime rates, right? And improve the operations of basically police operations. So, but the thing is, the police force need to be willing to trial this, right? And that's for us is the next step. So there needs to be willingness or an engagement from them as well to, like, you know, let's trial this, even in a small pilot phase. And they need to be released in doing the things the way they usually do. So it's also to do with, it's not just to do with basically allocating people into the project, but also sort of like a concerted effort that, you know, yes, we need this and let's try it. So there needs to be a lot of different chains of approval on changing the operations, the culture, and basically putting both the money and the effort into it.
Yeah, so it's not just implementing the new thing, but it's actually about change management, even in just a trial period. But instead of doing this, let's try this. So you have to move people across from the old thing first.
Yeah, it's completely behavior, right? We're dealing with people who used to do things certain way. It's not going to be easy when we want to do change, apply this kind of change on a community level.
Excellent. Thanks for sharing that. Let's move on to the next question, which is, what are the emerging trends that people aren't talking about enough?
The emerging trends, I guess a lot of people are talking about AI taking away their jobs, right? People are afraid of, you know, AI and all that. But there are also emerging trends on AI for good. And people are not talking about this enough. The media is not talking about this enough. Like, there are a lot of good things that's happening because of AI, right? AI and in Internet of Things. And I know also a lot of people getting scared with tracking. And we also have just got a conversation article about this, that, you know, there's so much tracking on our apps, on the different apps on the phone right now, that even we wrote an article in the conversation just a couple of days ago, it's actually published, where we said, we quoted the article from Wall Street Journal that says that Facebook will now know when you are pregnant or when you got period, because your period tracking app actually shared this information to Facebook. So the thing is, there's a lot of fear to do with my privacy is lost, my data is now owned by the big companies. But there are also emerging trends in research, and maybe it hasn't gone to the public yet so much, because this is a really hot topic in our research domain, is to protect privacy better and also to make AI more transparent, to make AI more fair. So, you know, not just fairness in representation, but also fairness in allocations, allocating resources to people. Because when, you know, for example, the decision about whether somebody is getting an insurance or not is decided by a certain algorithm, how can we trust the algorithm, right? So how can we make that algorithm more open and explainable and fair? So there are these research trends that we are working on as we speak. And I think there needs to be more coverage about this. People are afraid of autonomous vehicles, you know, because we don't know what we don't know, right? But there's also a lot of work in trying to make things more transparent. Like, you know, can you, like, you know, for me to trust you, I need to know you, right? I need to build this relationship with you, right? You need to explain things to me. And the same thing, for me to trust a certain algorithm, this algorithm needs to be able to be more open and transparent to, and to explain what's going on.
Mm. No, I really like that analogy, and it's so true. And I think taking control of data, so rather than just being fearful, but just saying, oh, you know, understanding what companies and businesses are using with our data and what's the benefit for us. So actually being a bit more proactive in that space, I think, is really important and such a role in the smart communities that we're creating and building that we're a part of. Because there is a lot to be scared of, but also I think we forget that people are making decisions right now about whether we get insurance or not. And, you know, no one's up in arms about it yet. But then once we move on to the next phase, because we don't know, we're scared of that, even though it might be a more accurate or more transparent or a better way to do it. But we're just used to stuck in what we're currently doing. But I think choice is so important, and knowing what is done with our data as well is so important. And how do we continue or start that conversation with people in our everyday community that they do have a choice about what data they do want to share and what they don't, and what, if they do share that data, what is the benefit to them, and are they okay with that trade-off? But yeah, I think you're totally right. That conversation needs to happen more on the ground and not just in a professional or an academic arena, but, you know, with the community.
Exactly. And I think it'll be great if you and the listeners could look at my recent article on algorithmic governance. I think that's something that you'd be interested in looking at. So algorithmic governance, where we talk about a lot of things right now are already governed by algorithms. Like simple example, like traffic lights. There's an algorithm running traffic lights sequences, right? But there'll be more. And there is, of course, the benefits of algorithmic governance. And there are a lot of perils about it as well, because it could be hacked, right? It can be malicious intent that changes how these algorithms work. People could steal your data. And there's a lot of these perils. But at the same time, how do we then move away from this governance to actually insert a human in the loop again, and then having this sort of like an increased level of collaboration within human and AI as well? So maybe have a look at that article. And I think there's a lot of insights, because it's not just me. There are four other academics who actually co-authored that paper. So there are five of us who wrote the article, and we are all from different universities from around the world. So
no, that's excellent. We'll put the link in the show notes as well, so the listeners can read it. And I'll definitely read that one.
Great.
Well, it's been so great to talk with you, Flora. Thanks so much for coming on to the Smart Community Podcast.
My pleasure, and I really enjoy chatting with you too.
Awesome. And we definitely need to have more conversations, because I think we've talked about a lot of things that we share common interests in.
Great. Thank you, Zoe.
Okay. Well, I just have one last question, which is, how can people connect with you?
You can connect with me on LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn and quite active. And I'm also on Twitter, FLOSALIM, Flora Salim. On Twitter, that's my Twitter handle. And I've got a web homepage as well, and my email details are on my homepage, but I don't quite update my website that much. So
no worries.
Yeah, I'm very active on LinkedIn.
Yeah, we'll put all the links in the show notes. Thanks again for coming onto the podcast, and I look forward to our next conversation.
Thank you.
Talk soon. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks so much for listening to the Smart Community Podcast. Show notes for this episode and all other episodes are available on our website, mysmart.community. If you have any questions for us or any of our guests, you can email hello@mysmart.community or find us on the socials. We are on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter. at smartcompod. That's com with two M's. If you are enjoying the podcast, please leave us a rating and review at wherever you listen. This really helps us reach more ears, so thank you in advance. As always, I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as I enjoyed making it.
The Smart Community Podcast is what you're looking for.